At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Serhii Plokhii, Professor of Ukrainian History, Director of the Ukrainian Research Institute at Harvard University. His new book is The Russo-Ukrainian War, The Return of History. The decision is made at the Kremlin by Vladimir Putin, his state security chiefs watching. On the 27th, what we call now the Little Green Men appear, gunmen in Crimea. A man named Aksionov is identified by the Kremlin as to be the new prime minister of the Crimean parliament. This is very much an annexation by brute force of Crimea. The puzzlement now, reading the professor's timeline here, is what the U.S. did, what NATO did, how they reacted to what was clearly an intention to brutalize and tear apart Ukraine. Professor, I know that there are second thoughts everywhere, but your measure today, did NATO go along with the Crimean annexation because it was anxious about war, it was not ready to war, it hadn't anticipated that Putin would go that far? Why was there not the protest? I know there were sanctions, but not the protest at the level we see today with a similar brutality by Russia.
I am personally convinced that if reaction to the annexation of the Crimea would be on the same level as was the reaction to the start of the all-out war against Ukraine in February of 2022, we would not have today this big war that Ukraine is fighting with the help of its Western allies. So the question is why there was no such reaction. And my explanation to that is by drawing historical parallel between the annexation of Crimea and Anschluss of Austria. And the reaction of the West, collective West, was more or less of the same kind. That yes, of course, this is an unhappy occurrence, but isn't this a fear that all the Germans have to live in one German state? Isn't this true that the majority of the population in the Crimea are Russian? Most likely, Hitler would stop at annexation of the Austria and would not go further. Most likely, this is an exception in Putin's behavior, and he would not go further after the Crimea because there are no other parts or regions of Ukraine or any country, for that matter, where the Russians would constitute the majority. That was, in my understanding, the main reason why the annexation of the Crimea was treated as a bump on the road to the future improvement of relationship. And Germany in particular starts building Nord Stream 2 after building Nord Stream 1, believing that the more economic ties are there with Russia, the less likely would be the escalation, the less likely would be a conflict of the sort that we have today. It was a mistake.
Putin and the Kremlin deceived, and perhaps NATO wanted to be deceived, but the idea was we're only interested in taking back Crimea, which was given to the Ukrainians by Khrushchev. There is a lot of talk about what Lenin did or did not do about the new Russia. There's a lot of talk about history. However, the pretense was this is as far as we'll go. Immediately, there were provoked and driven so-called eruptions in Donetsk Oblast and Luhansk Oblast. We can see now clearly that those were concocted by Russian agents or sympathetic voices to Russia. And at the time, nothing was done challenging this, and Ukraine committed itself to a perpetual frontline war where 14,000 people died between February, March of 2014 and the start of the invasion of Ukraine in 2022. So it wasn't a small matter. Again, though, it's the same mystery why the West stood by. Did NATO fear a larger war? Did they express that at the time, the way they do now routinely, whenever there's a change in the weather in Ukraine?
NATO not only feared the larger war, that was certainly the case, but the entire policy of the NATO was to try to convince Russia that they were not only not thinking about the war, but they were incapable of fighting the war. The whole point was of pacifying Russia, not placing any NATO military units too close to the borders, not just of Russia, but also Ukraine as well. Not placing U.S. troops, in particular in Eastern Europe. So when the annexation of the Crimea came in 2014, it wasn't that only that NATO countries didn't want to respond. The problem was that they had very little to respond with. And it's only later that we see the build up of the NATO capacities and abilities in the region. The process that is not fully complete till now. The latest NATO summit in Vilnius, for the first time, there were adopted three different plans of defensive operations in Eastern Europe. I'm talking about July 2023. We are in the NATO is in the state of planning. Can you imagine what the situation was back in 2013 or 2014?
There are events here that are critical to note because they will play out in the future. But the deception of we're only interested in the Crimea quickly goes away. What the professor writes is that Putin sought a veneer of legitimacy, and it was vouchsafed by the NATO voices, by the United States at the time, by the Obama administration, with Joe Biden as president. We could see what was happening, however, and the Russians invaded in the summer of 2014. There's no other word for it, a massive Russian counterattack that led to the massacre of Ukrainian forces that had been rallied to defend their country. This led to the second Minsk agreement. By that time, there was a new president, a former oligarch and billionaire, a man named Poroshenko. And they met again in Minsk, the capital of Belarus, Merkel, Putin, Hollande, then president of France, and Petroshenko, and agreed to the Minsk II. Minsk II, was that a convenient explanation for NATO? We've achieved something, Minsk II?
Absolutely. And that was something that the United States, Germany, the NATO allies in Europe were trying to implement, and very often in the Russian version of the agreements, the way how Russia read those agreements. The key sticking point there was what should come first in the implementation of the Minsk agreements. Either elections on the territory controlled by Russia or Ukraine taking control of its own borders and then conducts elections on the basis of its laws and under its control. Russia insisted on elections first under the Russian control, military control, and then taking these regions, using them as Trojan horse, putting them into the body of the political body of Ukraine and really destabilizing Ukraine, precluding the situation in which Ukraine would be able to apply to the European Union, to try to get closer to the West, to NATO. That was the plan, and for a while it was backed by leading countries in NATO, because the idea was it wasn't too far from the policies of appeasement of the 1930s.
Yes, they went along with a fragmented Ukraine, which is exactly 1930s, more Czechoslovakia and the Sudetenland than Austria. But in any event, the predator, Moscow, was given permission because there was no cost. So it's now 2015, and there appears to be stability, although I said there was an artillery war for the next 7 years. We need to turn to the events of 2021, 2022 to understand how poorly NATO responded to Russian provocations. The professor's book is The Russo-Ukrainian War, The Return of Histories. Serhii Plokhii is the author. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.